Hello, it's Debbie back again on Wednesday, March 2nd, 2016, with the Decatur Herald and Review. Starting with A1, start with the first article that pops up here on the first page of the e-edition, Holy Family Helps Healthy Habits. Actually, the headline that if you were looking right at the paper, it says, School Walks New Path. Decatur. This is by Justin Kahn, an H&R staff writer. Marcy Neighbor has always practiced good health habits, but when she had a heart attack at 34, she decided to dedicate her life to living healthy. But Neighbor doesn't just want to live healthy to save herself. She recently made a career change and is now the physical education teacher at Holy Family School. In her first year, she's helped Holy Family make changes to improve the overall health of the school. I told them when I first got the job, our kids don't move enough, Neighbor said. Neighbor said with the rise of electronic devices Neighbor said, with the rise of electronic devices as such a large source of kids' free time, they're often sacrificing physical activity. One of the things that shocked me was, when we started this, I asked the kids, do you know how to jump rope? Neighbor said, 3/4 of the kids, even up to 6th grade, didn't know how. When I was young, everyone my age was outside all the time and doing things like jump roping. We were having fun, but we were also keeping our hearts healthy. Now kids are playing on their iPads. We need to get their base in PE. We can still play all the fun sports like baseball, basketball, and volleyball, but also teach them they need to have fitness in their lives, and that includes running, push-ups, and sit-ups. Neighbor was an athlete in college and continued to work out after. But heart disease runs in her family. When Neighbor was in high school, her grandmother had open heart surgery and her dad had a heart attack. Still, it came as a shock when Neighbor went to the emergency room for a heart attack at age 34. I couldn't believe it, and the hospital staff couldn't either, Neighbor said. Neighbor said after her heart attack, she knew she had to go the extra mile to stay healthy. Her grandma changed her habits and is still alive at 93, and her dad did the same. I was healthy before, but I didn't eat like I do now, Neighbor said. I exercised, but I just did what I needed to. I wasn't fully committed. After that, I modified the way I'd been eating and started getting more exercise in. It became a priority to get myself healthy, but also get my family healthy and eventually other people. Neighbor worked in human resources for several years. When the business she worked for closed, she decided to pursue what had become a passion. My degree actually was in education, and when a PE position came open and they called me, I said, absolutely, Neighbor said. At my old job, I'd sit for at least 5 hours at a time working at my computer. It's like that for kids, too. As adults, we need to get up and get moving, and the kids need to be doing the same thing. Neighbor said the theme for her first year was getting the kids more active, but she ramped it up in February for Heart Health Month. I've been focusing on getting their heart rates up and keeping it up for the whole 45 minutes they're with me, Neighbor said. We're trying to teach them that they need to start exercising now and maintaining it throughout their lives to keep a healthy heart. One of the February activities was having CrossFit stations. Each station represented a different aerobic or calisthenic exercise. The kids were shocked about how sore their muscles were the next day when they first did it, Neighbor said. But it's not just in PE that Holy Family is taking the health initiative. Outside the family is a new quarter-mile walking path. You think of a walking path as such a simple thing, but it's a great tool, Holy Family Principal Debbie Alexander said. We see parishioners and our neighbors out walking on the walking path every single day, all ages. That's good for their health and good for our kids to see adults and the elderly out there being good role models. Neighbor said as long as the weather is above freezing, her students spend some time each day on the path. Even if we have an activity planned in the gym, we go out and get some running or walking on the track before we come back in, Neighbor said. Holy Family also has what Alexander called a health and wellness basket in the office with healthy snacks available for anyone who wants something. If it's been a busy morning and they skip breakfast, we have the basket full of fruits and granola bars, healthy choices, Alexander said, and we encourage any parent who didn't have a chance to get breakfast to grab something out of it, too. We keep it filled throughout the day, and we even see kids grabbing something on the way out. They're opting for an apple, banana, or orange instead of the more traditional after-school snack. Neighbor said the goal is to get the students used to choosing healthy snacks. We talked to them about eating colorful vegetables and healthy foods, not chips, neighbor said. We want them to stay away from those fried foods. Holy Family's drinking fountain has been equipped with an attachment that refills water bottles, allowing kids access to water all day without the disruption of multiple trips to the fountain while also reusing bottles. We want to teach them that drinking water is good for them. It hydrates their brain and their bodies, Alexander said. We encourage them to have water all day long, and this way prevents additional water bottles from going to the landfill. The activities in February were coordinated with the American Heart Association, a trend neighbor wants to see continued. The kids need to see them in the school, neighbor said. It's just not just about fundraising. It's about getting them aware how many people are affected by heart issues and learning how to avoid them. Alexander said it's important to team student behaviors that can help reverse the trend toward obesity in the U.S. Our attitudes and our habits are developed at such an early age, Alexander said. If we can start them off on the right path, they won't have these same issues as adults that we do. Next on the page, AP, Chicago homicides, shootings double in 2016. This is from AP writer Don Babwin, Chicago. Homicides and shootings have doubled in Chicago so far this year compared with the same period in 2015, and police have seized fewer illegal guns, perhaps more signals that officers have become less aggressive in the aftermath of a shooting video released last fall. Interim Police Superintendent John Escalante said Tuesday that he was so concerned about officers possibly holding back that he filmed a video for the entire department in which he encouraged them to do their jobs and assured them that a federal probe of the force was not aimed at individuals. We are aware that there's a concern among the rank and file about not wanting to be the next YouTube video that goes viral, Escalante said in the video before introducing a segment of his own to remind viewers why we took this job and swore this oath of office. The statistics come almost exactly 3 months after the city, on the orders of a judge, released the video of Jason Van Dyke, a white officer, firing 16 shots at Laquan McDonald, a black teen killed in 2014. Since that day, Van Dyke has been charged with murder and Superintendent Gary McCarthy has been fired. The Department of Justice launched a civil rights probe of the police force, and Mayor Rahm Emanuel has sought to regain public trust in the department and his own leadership. The crime figures offer a stark reminder that the nation's third largest city is nowhere near shedding its reputation for frequent street violence. The vast majority of the bloodshed is happening in the neighborhoods on the south and west sides, away from the Loop Business District. In the first 2 months of the year, the authorities recorded 95 homicides, compared with 48 for the same period last year. Thus far, there have been 406 shootings, or more than twice as many of the 180 reported in the same two-month period in 2015. The McDonald case raised concerns that officers, fearful of attracting negative attention, may be pulling back and becoming more passive. Quietly, officers say they're not going to take chances that might land them in legal troubles or threaten their jobs and pensions. I'm hearing the police are standing down because they're afraid what might happen to them, that they'll get a call, that they wait to see if someone answers it first, said Reverend Michael Flegger, a prominent Roman Catholic priest and activist on the South Side. I get really angry about that. If we're not going to do police work, they need to get out. Evidence of a pullback starts with an 80% decrease in the number of street stops that the officers have made since the first of the year. Escalante believes that the decrease is largely tied to the fact that since the first of the year, officers have been required to fill out lengthier forms than the brief contact cards they used to use. The new forms were a result of changes in state law and agreement between the department and ACLU of Illinois that required Chicago police to more thoroughly document and monitor street stops. Escalante said he hopes the newer and simpler forms the officers have started filling out Tuesday will help bring those numbers back up. Officers' unwillingness to make as many stops as they once did might also explain the steep decline in gun seizures. Normally, the number of illegal guns recovered by police would climb with the number of homicides and shooting incidents, but the opposite has happened. So far this year, the total number of illegal guns seized by the department has fallen from 955 in the first 2 months of last year to 829 so far this year. The decrease is particularly striking after the way McCarthy used to put seized weapons on display at news conferences. The displays were meant to show that his department was taking more guns off the street than any other police force in the nation and to urge lawmakers to enact tougher gun laws. The president of the union representing Chicago police officers did not respond Tuesday from messages from the AP seeking comment. Escalante has not put guns on his display as often, said he was not de-emphasized guns. Escalante, who has not put guns on display as often, said he has not de-emphasized gun seizures. He pointed to encouraging recent signs that include a 33% increase in gun arrests in the last 4 weeks and a 20% increase in the number of street stops officers have made in the last 2 weeks. He said he is optimistic that street stop numbers will continue to climb with the new shorter form that replaces the two-page inventory stop form officers have been filling out since January 1. And he said he's hopeful that certain changes, including the deployment of 100 newly trained sergeants to increase supervision, will ease the crime numbers. I believe the officers are starting to make the effort again, he said, to try to do what they can do to bring the violence down. End of that article. In politics, on page one, Clinton, Trump claim big Super Tuesday wins. This is by Julie Pace and Jill Colvin of AP. Washington, Republican Donald Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton swept through the South on Super Tuesday, claiming victories in their party primaries in delegate-rich Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, and Virginia. The frontrunners appeared even more likely to end up in a general election showdown. On the Republican side, Ted Cruz won his home state of Texas, the night's single biggest prize, as well as neighboring Oklahoma. Democrat Bernie Sanders picked up a home state win as well in Vermont and one in Oklahoma, too. Still, the night belonged to Trump and Clinton, who turned the busiest day of the 2016 primaries into a showcase of their strengths with their wide swath of American voters. Signaling her confidence, Clinton set her sights on Trump as she addressed supporters during a victory rally. It's clear tonight that the stakes in this election have never been higher, and the rhetoric we're hearing on the other side has never been lower, she said. Trump, too, had his eye on the general election matchup with the former Secretary of State, casting her as a part of a political establishment that has failed Americans. She's been there for so long, Trump said, at his swanky Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida. If she hasn't straightened it out by now, she's not going to straighten it out in the next 4 years. Trump's dominance has rattled Republican leaders who fear he's unelectable against Clinton in November. Even as Trump professed to have good relationships with his party's elite, he issued a warning to House Speaker Paul Ryan, who declared earlier in the day that this party does not prey on people's prejudices. Trump said that if two don't get along, he's going to have to pay a big price. But all efforts to stop him have failed, including an aggressive campaign by Florida Senator Marco Rubio to discredit the billionaire businessman. For Rubio, Super Tuesday turned into a bitter disappointment. While many Republican officeholders have rallied around him in recent days, his first victory remained elusive. With an eye on Florida's March 15th primary, Rubio vowed to keep up efforts to unmask the true nature of the front runner in this race. With results still coming in, Trump had won at least 139 Super Tuesday delegates, while Cruz picked up at least 52. Overall, Trump leads the Republican field with 221 delegates. Sanders' wins did little to help him make up ground in his delegate race with Clinton. She was assured of winning at least 334 of the 865 at stake on Super Tuesday. That's compared to Sanders, who had at least 145 delegates. Tuesday marked the busiest day of the 2016 primary with the biggest single day delegate haul up for grabs. Democrats voted in 11 states and America Samoa with 865 delegates at state. Republicans voted in 11 states with 595 delegates. Clinton also picked up wins in Arkansas and Texas, while Trump carried the GOP contest in Arkansas and Massachusetts. Desperately needed his win in Texas to stay in the race and was likely to keep campaigning as the only Republican who has been able to defeat Trump in any primary contest. Still, Trump's wins in the South were a blow to Cruz, who once saw the region as his opportunity to stake a claim to the nomination. Instead, he's watched Trump, a brash New York real estate mogul, display surprising strength with evangelical Christians and social conservatives. Republicans spent months largely letting Trump go unchallenged, wrongly assuming that his populist appeal with voters would fizzle. Instead, he appeared to only grow stronger, winning states and drawing board support for some of his most controversial proposals. In six of the states on Tuesday, large majorities of Republican voters said they supported a proposal to temporarily ban all non-citizen Muslims from entering the United States, an idea championed by Trump. 9 in 10 of Trump's voters were looking for an outsider, and half were angry with the government, according to exit polls conducted by the Edison Research for the Associated Press and television networks. In the Democratic race, Clinton has steadied herself after an unexpectedly strong early challenge from Sanders. The Vermont senator did carry his home state decisively and told the crowd at the raucous victory party that he was so proud to bring Vermont values all across this country. Sanders, who has energized supporters with his calls for a political revolution, has struggled to expand his base beyond young people and liberals. His weakness with black voters, a core part of the Democratic constituency, was underscored anew. Clinton was supported by at least 80% of black voters in Alabama, Arkansas, Virginia, Tennessee, and Texas. She was bolstered by women and older voters. More than 90% of Clinton's voters wanted an insider, according to exit polls, and nearly half said experience was the top quality they were looking for in a candidate. That's the end of that article. The last article on the front page is Trump troubles Illinois GOP congressman. Trump candidacy troublesome to Illinois GOP congressman. This is by Lenore Sabuda, a Lee News Service writer. Bloomington. As Donald Trump continues to gather more delegates in his bid to be the Republican nominee for president, he is causing divisions within the party. Republican Congressman Rodney Davis of Taylorville, Adam Kinzinger of Shanahan, and Darren LaHood of Dunlap are backing Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. Davis said Tuesday, "I'm going to vote for whoever our party nominee is over Democratic candidates, Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders." But Kinzinger had questioned the billionaire real estate developer's fitness to be president. Tuesday as much said he'd like to get to yes and support Trump if he gets the nomination. "I just don't see how I can get there right now." LaHood was unavailable for comment Tuesday. The AP reported Monday that U.S. Senator Ben Sasse, a conservative Republican from Nebraska, questioned whether a party led by Trump would still represent the things we believe in. And U.S. Senator Dan Coats, Republican Indiana, told the AP, "I have serious concerns about his ability to provide presidential leadership." Carl Palmer, assistant professor of political and government at Illinois State University, said, "I can't think of a recent election where the party didn't rally around the eventual nominee." However, he said, "This election is unlike any we've seen in recent years." Among Kinzinger's objections to Trump are, quote, "a fraud of trying to make people believe he's a conservative and make people believe he's a champion of the middle class," unquote. He said Trump's style of campaigning has, quote, "upended the whole system and is devastating to political dialogue. It's devastating to the future of our country," unquote. In explaining his hesitancy to support Trump if he gets the nomination, Kinzinger said, "I always would put my country above my party." Carrie Militia, Carrie Milita, Illinois Assistant Professor of Politics and Government, said one reason for Trump's success so far is that the Republican Party, quote, fielded mostly establishment candidates in a year when the public is anti-establishment. Although Milita thinks most Republican leaders will support Trump if he gets the nomination, I think he'll be quite quiet falling in line. He's alienated a lot of people at this point. Palmer said if Trump should end up the nominee, there'll be a lot of pressure to close ranks. Kinzinger said, I think the party can unite behind the right candidate. And in Kinzinger's opinion, that's Rubio. Fellow Rubio supporter Davis said, Marco Rubio could lead us into the next Reagan revolution. I think the torch should be passed to this next generation. The interest generated by Trump isn't all bad, observers say. I think there's a positive effect because there's been so much publicity, Davis said. The televised debates had record viewership. Kinzinger agreed the increased involvement in the process is, quote, a silver lining, unquote, to the Trump phenomenon. But he said, I'd like to have people interested in issues, politics, and policies, and not tuning to see a train wreck or who he insults next. Palmer and Davis said the nomination might not be decided until the GOP's national convention in July. End of that article. Moving on to the next page in the A section, prison sentence for arson, pair of 5-year terms given following plea by Richard A. Durbin. Decatur man who torched house, garage, sent to prison. This is by Huey Freeman of the H&R staff. Decatur. A 28-year-old Decatur man was sentenced to 5 years in prison as part of a plea deal in which he pleaded guilty to 2 counts of felony arson for lighting on fire a vacant house and a garage on the city's near north side. Richard A. Durbin, who's been held in jail since his arrest for the 2 incidents the night of July 31st, entered the guilty plea Monday morning as his case was about to go to trial. As part of the deal, 2 felony counts of burglary and 1 of aggravated resisting a peace officer were dismissed. Durbin was ordered to register as an arsonist by Macon County Circuit Court Judge Thomas E. Griffith. Presenting the factual base of the case, Assistant State's Attorney Lindsay Shelton said Durbin admitted that he set the 2 fires. 1 fire was set inside the passenger compartment of an antique Porsche located in a garage on the 1300 block of North Union Street at 7 p.m. July 31st. The other fire was set 1 hour later on a mattress in a house in the 1200 block of North Church. Shelton told the court that when Durbin was apprehended that night, he had in his pocket the hood ornament from the Porsche, and a lighter. Durbin, who has prior convictions of aggravated battery and domestic battery in 2011, was sentenced to 5 years on each of the 2 arson counts to be served concurrently. With credit for time served in jail, he'll be eligible for parole in 2018. Durbin was arrested about 8:30 p.m. July 31st after a Decatur patrol officer spotted a man matching the description of a suspected arsonist provided by a witness. An officer apprehended Durbin after a foot chase. During a police interview, Durbin said he entered the garage to steal the Porsche's battery to sell it. He said he ignited his lighter to illuminate the engine compartment, which caught the inside of the hood on fire. However, an inspection by the Decatur Fire Department concluded the fire was set inside the vehicle. Similarly, Durbin misrepresented how the fire in the vacant house had been set. He told police his lighter touched off a fire on a piece of cardboard as he lit up the basement to steal children's toys in a tent and place them in a bag. An inspection showed the fire was set in another part of the house. Assistant Public Defender Scott Reuter represented Durbin. Durbin is being held without bond in jail pending transfer to the Illinois Department of Corrections. End of that article. Next article, Stevenson students cover Black history. This is by Valerie Wells of the Herald and Review, as we know. Decatur. The Underground Railroad quilt code is disputed by some historians. As put forward by proponents, people would hang quilts with specific designs on the clothesline to direct runaway slaves with hidden messages. The log cabin design, for example, signaled a safe house. Drunkard's Path design, which has 2 crooked lines crossed to form a sort of X, warned escaping slaves to take a zigzag path to avoid capture. Slaves also sang songs that on the surface appeared to be songs of faith, but also contained code and were used to signal others that an escape plan was underway. In Jennifer Tom's sixth grade classroom at Stevenson School, the study of Black History Month has been based on the kids' own questions. It was all about things they wanted to learn about for Black History Month rather than me telling them what we were going to learn about, Tom said. It was what they wanted to know. I took all those questions, typed them all up, and they've been researching them for the last several weeks, and we've been putting them on our timeline. For some questions, Tom's added a line or two of her own to narrow topics down to manageable size. The Underground Railroad was one such suggestion. Tom said the kids were particularly interested in it. The most visible project of the study, however, is the quilt. Tom's is a quilter who sells her work at shows, and she created cloth templates of the most common designs for the kids to color in, then took those home and made them into a quilt to display in the classroom. Really, the only question that made this unit different from what everybody else did was they came up with their own questions, Tom said. Madison enjoys watching the Olympics, so her question, who was the first African-American to win an Olympic medal? And the answer was Jesse Owens in the 1936 Berlin Games. Owens won 4 medals in track and field. I just really like the Olympics, so that's what made me think of it, she said. Davian Jackson wanted to know how slavery got started in the first place and discovered that it wasn't when Africans were brought to the United States. When the first pioneers came to America, they enslaved the natives and used them for their work, but the natives found a way to go back home. I don't know where to put it on the timeline because I don't think it happened within the 1600s. I just looked up how did slavery begin. But how I thought of that question, it was just something that popped in my head. End of that article. Continuing, under local briefs, Decatur, Monroe Street closure. The southbound lane along the curb at the 500 to 600 block of North Monroe Street will be closed for pavement repair from 4 p.m. on Friday. Wait a minute. Let's start over again. The southbound lane along the curb of 500 to 600 block of North Monroe Street will be closed for pavement repair through 4 p.m. Friday, March 12th. That's a week from Friday. This work will detour traffic to the northbound lane heading south along curb of the 500 to 600 block of North Monroe. Decatur, St. Patrick's Parade. Decatur's annual St. Patrick's Day Parade will be 11 a.m. Saturday, March 12th. The Grand Marshal is the FFA. After the parade, the Knights of Columbus Hall will host a party open to the public. Entries are still being accepted. For more information, contact Jim Wrigley at home on the phone or on his email, which is james_wrigley@yahoo.com. Decatur Museum Youth Volunteers. The Children's Museum of Illinois is looking for students who will be in the 7th to 12th grades in the fall to join its junior volunteer program. The museum is partnering with the University of Illinois Extension Office in Macon County 4-H to offer junior master gardener or junior educator volunteer tracks. Students will receive training in related areas to the track, including child development stages, positive youth development, horticulture, and communication. The junior master gardener track will begin in March, and the junior educator track will begin in June. Volunteers will work a 3-hour shift once a week during the summer, pay a $20 registration fee to 4-H for training, purchase the museum t-shirt for 10, and attend training sessions. For more information, go to the museum, the Children's Museum of Illinois' website, or contact Katie McVeigh at kmcvay, K-M-C-V-A-Y, the CM of Ill, the .org, or call 423-5437, 423-5437. And then closing out here, Decatur Soccer Scholarship. The Decatur Family YMCA is accepting applications for the Petrosky Soccer Scholarship. Applicants must compose a maximum 500-word essay, complete application, and have previously played soccer in the Decatur Family YMCA Youth Soccer League. Criteria and application can be found at the Y website. Applications are due Thursday, March 31st. This is the end of reading for part one of the e-edition of the Herald and Review from Decatur on Wednesday, March 2nd, 2016. This is Debbie saying, talk to you again soon.